Everybody always says, well, you've got a really strong work ethic. But I do honestly think it's because when I was a kid, every job I went for, some kids would go for it. And, you know, they just wanted to get the job because it pleased their mum or dad. I went because I was like, if I don't get this job, I'm out of this school. So it was my driving force behind everything that I did. And I think it's stuck with me.
Guys, welcome to a very special episode of the Matt Haycock Show. Today, I'm already feeling the pressure because we have with us a veteran of 20 plus years in show business. She's a pop star, she's a TV presenter, a dancer, an actress, a West End leading lady, a model, and much, much more. And she's also recently released an autobiography. It's a pleasure to have with us today, Denise Van Outen.
Thank you. Do you know what? That just makes me sound really greedy. I just do everything.
And old.
Yeah, exactly.
Jokes.
No, it's true. Been around for a long time.
How long is it now?
Well, I've worked professionally since I was 7 years old. So
was that a paying job? Life.
Yeah, I used to do modelling when I was a kid. So I started out as a child model. But I guess being publicly known would be the Big Breakfast. So I'm going back like 25 years, but maybe plus that now. And then previous to that, I did a kids' TV show. So some people sort of knew me pre-Big Breakfast. So a long time.
And of all those different things we talked about that you do, I mean, if you had to pick one, so that's like my favourite by a long way. What is it?
So it's really hard to say because I actually love everything that I do because I've got so much variety in my career. I never get bored. And I think that's the main thing for me because I'm ADHD, so I do get bored very quickly.
Are we okay this far?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, of course. Okay. That's fine.
Not bored?
No, not just yet, no. I'm sure I'll never tire of you. So I just like to do different things. I think as long as it's live, I'm fine. I just think when I do anything, like when I've shot film before, because it takes forever to shoot a scene, I find it a bit tedious. Because you're shooting the same scene, sometimes you can end up shooting a scene for like 3 or 4 days, just one scene on different cameras. But anything live, so whether it's presenting, live stage performance, live radio, that's my bag.
And do you still get any pressure and nerves from the live aspect of it?
I think to be a good performer or to be good at your job, you should feel nervous because it means you care. So I don't get nervous to the point where I can't do my job because I've got friends that have been in that situation where they just won't do live TV because they're too scared. But I think, sometimes I have to remind myself a lot of it's adrenaline. I definitely get that before I go on stage.
You know, when you first started doing stuff, I mean, did you kind of struggle to watch yourself? Like, you know, when I first doing this, I mean, we're 4 or 5 years into it now and I've got no issue watching something now, but I mean, like in the beginning, I mean, I just cringe. Literally, I'll put something on and I just have to turn it straight off. I think it was a combination of probably not being used to looking at yourself, but also the fact that I was probably pretty horrific back then as well. But I mean, I just couldn't watch it even in private.
I've never watched anything I've done.
Really?
I do it, I shoot it and I'm done, I'm gone. Because for a number of reasons, I think when you present, especially when I did the Big Breakfast, because it was live every day, I felt that, you know, if I watched it, what was the benefit to it really? Because I have another show the next day. So my main focus was what I was about to do next rather than looking back. And also, I think you end up picking up on things that perhaps you feel look a bit awkward on camera. So you become a bit too self-aware. And I think, especially with presenting or any kind of live TV, you shouldn't be self-conscious. You should just enjoy it.
But if you're not watching it back and therefore if you're not, I guess, seeing things where you thought you could improve, are there other people, like, are there other producers and stuff telling you you need to do this better?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, with everything, with live TV, your production team will tell you. But critics, you know, I mean, if you do a theatre show, you get reviewed anyway. So, and I take on board the good and the bad. Because some people don't like to read their reviews, but I do read them because I think even sometimes when I've been in a show and I've had bad reviews, they've actually done me good because I take something from it. Not all of them. Some of them you feel like you're being trolled a little bit because they're just out to get you. But there are some things that good critique or bad critique can help you equally.
Well, let's go back to the very beginning.
Yeah,
back to the Sylvia Young days. For anyone watching or listening who doesn't know, I mean that is the UK's most famous stage school by a long shot. I mean, did you get international kids there as well?
A few, but not so many. They were mainly London-based kids because it started out as a very small school. Sylvia started running it from a small church in London, and it just grew and grew. And I think the reason why the school itself has been so successful is she took on board most of the kids that weren't from a, you know, solid financial background. A lot of them were on grants, but she just recognised these talents in kids. And if you look at the people that she produced from the school, I mean, Amy Winehouse, she was the person that got Amy Winehouse into music. You know, because at a theatre school, you're kind of pushed to do more sort of acting and musical theatre, which was very much what I wanted to do. But she sent her down the path of music. Rita Ora, Billy Piper, Samantha Womack, the All Saints Girls,
How big was it, Spice Girls? By the time you'd gone, though, it had been around for a while, the school?
It had been, but it was actually, when we look back at my year, and I do this quite often with Sylvia, it is quite amazing how many of us have gone on to work and continue to work. There was like this little group of women that, you know, we look now and we go, how is it that we're all still doing it? But I think maybe we fed off each other because it was kind of like, it was competitive but in a good way.
How old were you when you went there?
I was 11.
And you stayed through to late teenish, do you?
No, I left when I was 16 because I was working. But I went, I wasn't supposed to go to a theatre school. I ended up, I went to a convent school, which suited me very well.
Did it keep you under control?
I got in trouble all the time. And then I got into Les Miserables when it first opened in the West End in London. And my school at the time, they said to me that I wouldn't be able to do it because I wasn't allowed the time off to do the show. So I was like, how do I make this work? And the only solution was to go to a theatre school. So I kind of went to Sylvia's. It wasn't part of the plan. It was meant to be a temporary thing. And I was only supposed to go for the duration of doing Les Miserables. But then I just kept working, and then I just loved it.
And tell me, a minute ago you mentioned that obviously one of the good things about Sylvia's was that they had a lot of kids on grants. And I believe, were you on a grant or are you, I know you certainly weren't one of the wealthy kids there, were you?
No, I actually paid for my own schooling.
But so, out of the jobs you were doing?
Yeah. So everybody always says, well, you've got a really strong work ethic. But I do honestly think it's because when I was a kid, every job I went for, some kids would go for it and, you know, they just wanted to get the job because it would please their mum or dad. I went because I was like, if I don't get this job, I'm out of this school. So it was my driving force behind everything that I did. And I think I've just, it's stuck with me. Even now, my friends laugh at me because I'm lucky, you know, I've worked consistently for years. But every time I do a job, I sort of laugh to myself and go, well, that'll pay for a new patio, that'll pay for new curtains. Because it's just how I'm wired, I guess, from being a child. It was like every job I get, I mentally think, right, what will this cover? And this will cover next term school fees.
And I guess, I mean, aside from having the work ethic, I mean, no matter how successful you are in this line of business, you still never really know if it's going to be your last job.
Absolutely. And I also love the job that I do. I meet very interesting people like yourself and just have a really nice time. And I think if I wasn't enjoying it, I wouldn't do it. Sometimes it doesn't really feel like work for me because it's such a nice environment to be in. Don't get me wrong, I have to work. I do work really hard and people are quite surprised. There's a lot of travelling. There's a lot of time spent on your own. I'm constantly on my phone, which is probably really annoying for a lot of my friends and family. But I'm a businesswoman at the end of the day and I'm running my business.
I mean, aside from those bits that you might not enjoy as much, what I mean, are there any particular aspects of actually doing the job that you don't like as much as others?
Oh, I love it. I love everything about it because I've grown to love it more and more because I've appreciated it more. And I think especially after the couple of years that we all had where we felt restricted, I appreciate everything so much more. You know, and the times when I used to sit in a dressing room and be waiting around to go on set, now I'll go and find people and sit and have a laugh with them because I like meeting new people and doing new things. And also I've turned everything into another opportunity or I've learned something from it. So I kind of like see it as a good thing, really.
I always think that even things that have gone wrong, everything ultimately has always led to something else.
Yeah.
And from a business perspective, people say to me, oh, you know, that thing you did then that went wrong, don't you regret doing that? And I always say, it never once crosses my mind because ultimately doing that led me to meet that person, which led me to do that. And, you know, if I hadn't have lost that money or made those catastrophic mistakes, I ultimately wouldn't be where I am today.
I mean, I'd give an example of that. I was offered, when they very first came up with the idea of Strictly Come Dancing, I knew Bruce Forsyth really well and I'd done a few shows with him. We used to sing together. And he came to me and approached me to be sidekick for Strictly Come Dancing and said to me, you know, there's this show, it's all ballroom, it's going to be celebrities. And he said, I want to open the show with a song and dance number with you, close it with you, because he knew that I danced and sang. And I remember sitting there and I went to him, Bruce, it sounds really boring. Strictly Come Dancing. So they gave it to Tess Daly. And then at the time, I remember it was a huge hit and I was thinking, oh, maybe I was a bit of an idiot there turning that down. But actually, when I look back, because Tess has done it for many years, but just kind of does that, and she's associated with it. Whereas I went on to do Broadway, I've done film, I've done theatre in the West, I've done so many other things, and I wouldn't have had such a varied career. So actually, for me, it worked out.
No, talking singing then, I want to talk a bit about, I guess, like passion over money, yeah. Money over passion, because I know in your early career, you were in a pop star in a band, which you gave up. Did you give that up to go and do presenting, was it?
Yes.
And I know you got some pressure from your management, record label, whatever. I mean, do you still live with that philosophy now, in that, you know, you will always take the things you want to do ahead of taking money, or I guess... I'm trying to almost putting words into your mouth that I don't want, but would you ever be, let's say, financially pragmatic about something nowadays and do jobs that you don't want just to get the money, or is it very much about, you know, following your dreams and following your passion?
I think, like, for me, because I am fortunate and in a good position, I don't feel pressured to have to do things for the money. But in the early days of my career, I definitely turned down a lot of big money offers. And, yeah, for that very reason, principle. With certain things, you know, I left a big radio gig because I wasn't happy in the environment I was working in, and it was a huge paycheck, but I walked away from it. I have no regrets doing that.
When you were walking away, did you have other things to go on to that you thought you preferred?
No.
You were just walking away because you knew it didn't feel right?
Just didn't feel right. And also, like anything in life, really, if it doesn't feel right and I'm not getting any joy out of it, I'll just leave it. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you just want to be happy, don't you? So, yeah, so I've walked away from that particular situation with my pop career. I just felt that it wasn't really where I wanted to be. You know, I was in a duo girl band and I wasn't really doing anything that I wanted to do, and I wasn't making the music that I wanted to. It was a very controlled environment. And then I was offered to do presenting, and the guy from the record label said to me, oh, that will last 5 minutes. And, of course, it was the big breakfast and it launched my whole career. So I've no regrets about that. But, yeah, I think you have to choose wisely. But also, I know myself, so I know what I thrive in and what I enjoy. And I think that's the key to everything. Just find what you love. And it doesn't matter what job it is. As long as it's something you absolutely love and you're passionate about, I think you'll always come out on top.
And talking about singing, I know you said that it's taken you a long time to get comfortable like singing as yourself, and that that you've always preferred singing behind the mask of a character, if you like. I mean, you know, do you have that kind of coping mechanism in any other aspects of your career, or what would your advice be to other people who struggle?
Well, it's interesting because I read recently that even Beyonce takes on a stage persona, Sasha Fierce.
Really?
Yeah. So apparently before she goes on, she just is not her.
Well, that's a name she's come up with.
Yeah. And a lot of people do it. And I suppose my thing was, from being a performer from such a young age, and I'd always been a character actress, so everything I'd done, even like Les Miserables, I'd played a role. So suddenly, like, I could do any song in character, but when I was asked to just sing something, I'd be like, oh, I don't know how to interpret this, or because that was just the thing that was in my head. So I think when I did The Masked Singer, that got rid of a lot of that for me. But again, if it helps you, just do it. My daughter's not the most confident child. I mean, it's quite hard for her because she's got me as her mum, who's confident. Her dad's an actor. And so when she does anything at school, they always expect her to just be the kid that's going to go up the front and be a bit showy, and it's not her at all. So she said to me, she's actually, even today, she's got a choir performance with the school, and it's with other schools in the area. And she was like, I'm really nervous. And I said, well, just be your character. So she's creating herself a little character today. I don't know who she's going to be.
How
but I do
she?
Think that helps 12, because I just think sometimes you just got to fake it a little bit. Do you know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with that. People think that there is, but there's nothing wrong with that. If it helps you feel confident, it gets you through something. Just, you know.
Do you think the shyness comes one way or the other when you've got, you know, either very confident parents or outgoing parents or not? Because I have a similar situation with my daughter in that, I mean, she'll be 16 in September. She's come out of her shell a lot more now. But, you know, especially when she was 12, 13, younger, you know, she'd be super, super shy. And I'd always, you know, think try and find ways to convince her to be more outgoing, and always say, well, you know, you've been around me for 12 years or 15 years or whatever, but I guess it just never seemed to matter.
Yeah, I don't think it does, and I just think each personality is different and whatever works for them. And I think sometimes it could be even more of a pressure if you have got confident parents. See, I'm confident because my sister is very shy, and I talk about it in my autobiography. And I think as a child, that's why I ended up becoming so confident because I used to have to speak for my sister because I could feel if we were in a room and someone asked my sister a question, I could feel her literally going red and thinking, please don't speak to me. So I would just step in and answer for her. And I think that's just stuck with me, really. I'm probably annoyingly confident.
Well, talking singing, and you mentioned obviously you're in a two piece pop band. You've had many duos and many famous duos that you've worked in over the years. How have you kind of developed your rapport with them, and how would you kind of translate that to advice for other people? You know, working with partners or having partners, you know, whether it's in business or showbiz or life in general.
Just be generous with everything, your time, everything. I think when I've worked with people, like my most successful TV pairings or music pairings, are when you have a respect and understanding of each other and be generous, like let the other person have their moment as well. You know, it's not all about you. So you have to work in unison. But I've had situations before in the past where, because I feel like I am like that, like because I've been doing it for so long and since I was a kid, I do feel like I really understand that the business that I'm in. But I think a lot of people come in and they just want to show off or just take over. And it doesn't really work like that. I think for you to be respected and remembered, you do have to understand that everybody plays a part. Whatever you do, whatever business you're in, you know, it's not just all about the front runners. It's all the other people that make it work.
And yeah. I mean, in kind of duos, whether it's singing duos or presenting duos, I mean, do you think some people are kind of best to be solo and some people will always be better together?
I think that probably comes with a situation of what makes you feel comfortable. I don't like to think that someone that's in, like for instance, I've got friends that are in a band and they would be too nervous to venture out on their own, but that's not having self-confidence. So that makes me quite sad for people because I think, well, you've all got the ability to do it. And also, especially with anything, before you do end up being put together as a duo or a band or anything like that, or in a group situation, you were always your own person anyway before that. So you should never really lose sight of that. But I think that's something that I found, like when I went off to be and became a mum, that I was out of everything for quite a long period of time. And I moved out to the country and I lived on a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. And it was really hard for me to step back into work. Because you sort of think, oh, I forgot the confidence. I became a mum at home. And that was a bit of a weird transition to get back into it. But I made sure that I got back in without leaving it too long, because I think you can leave it too long.
I mean, obviously you talk about the confidence of going back to work after being a mum. Did you find it was nervous or took a different kind of confidence to actually be a mum in the first place? Because I guess that was something completely different for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest role I've ever played and the hardest, toughest one, because you never know what you're going to be faced with daily.
Nappies, dirty nappies.
Yeah, I know.
And requests for your PayPal password.
And all my friends now are like, oh, it gets easier as they get old. I'm like, no, it really doesn't. My daughter's 12 and she's a teenager and I'm dealing with the eye rolling and she thinks I'm really uncool. Everything that I do.
I'm blessed with the most low maintenance, placid, almost 16-year-old you could possibly ask for.
Oh, well, that's good.
I think, I mean, literally in 16 years, I don't even think I've raised my voice.
Yeah. Well, I haven't. I've got to be honest, my daughter is as good as gold, but I've been through two periods of my life where I've ended up being a single mum again. It's just the two of us. And you do see the dynamic because it's just like, we're like friends. All my friends see us together and they're all said like, you're so close and so similar that it's like watching two mates, which I love. But obviously there are some things like, I did the TV show the other day, Steph's Packed Lunch. She said, when I got home, she went, I'd like to watch it. And I said, well, you watch it on catch up. She walked in, she went, can you just please don't dance on TV? And I was like, why? And she went, you just look really uncool. And I was like, hang on a minute. I think I'm quite cool. We're not cool. And she's like, no, you're not.
Just going back to partners as well. What about chemistry? Insofar as do you think chemistry can be developed or let's say fate, for want of a better word, or are there sometimes when you work with people and you know you just don't get each other, and you know even though you're both talented or capable people in your own rights, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think it's something you can't predict if it's going to work, and you can't put it there. I think, for instance, when I did the Big Breakfast with Johnny Vaughan. Previous to Johnny, I presented the show on my own for a period of time and I was the one that said, oh, we need to get someone in to do it with me. We tried so many different people alongside me. I did it with Ant and Dec for a period of time. They were very much a duo. Did it with Davina McCall, Jenny McCarthy. Loads of different presenters came in and did it with me and it just wasn't working. But then Johnny came and it just worked. So that's not something you can really put there. It would just
literally just work from the second you met each other.
As soon as we met, just we've got the same similar sense of humour. It just worked. And I think it's like with any TV parents, like Anne and Dick, you couldn't put them now with another person because it would just be a bit odd. They just bounce off each other.
When you have that kind of, I guess, like bouncing duo, I mean, is it always kind of like an equal duo or does someone normally take the lead?
I think it can be equal. I mean, it just depends. You sort of know your role within that. I don't know if it's... I mean, like, for instance, with Johnny, I'm one of the only people... He's 100 miles an hour and he doesn't shut up and everybody says to me, you're the only person that can stop him from talking. I don't know how I do it, but he does, you know, I think when he's with other people, he goes off in a tangent, but for some reason, he'll just listen to me and get his attention.
Let's talk about mischievous moments.
Yeah, so I've had many.
I know, obviously, early in the career, there was the famous Buckingham Palace incident, the Queen's toilet roll.
I'm forgiven now, apparently. Welcome back.
And flashing Prince Charles. But I mean, is that something that still lives with you today insofar as, you know, you bring that level of mischievousness to life in your career? Or do you think you've sobered up, but probably the wrong choice of words. But I mean, do you worry more nowadays?
I'm still the same, still naughty. I don't think it'll ever leave me. I always say to my friends, do you think I'll ever grow up? And they're like, no, please don't. It's more fun, isn't it? But yeah, no, I'm still very mischievous. And it's funny, actually, because it's seeing that in my daughter, because she's very much my personality and I can see it. And I pick her up from school and all the teachers say, well, she's made us laugh so much today. And I'm like, that's what I was like at school, I was the joker. So it's funny seeing that in her. I was like, oh, she's going to be trouble.
Were you always a joker from a very young age?
Very young age. But then my grandfather was as well. So my grandfather was a comedian in the forces.
Oh, really?
So I think maybe that's where it comes from. My mum's is the same as well. She's all a bit silly. Quite like it. Never been beige.
any mischievous moments that no one knows about that you can tell us about?
I'm trying to think of any. I mean, most of them are pretty out there. Because I sort of, you know, when you do, if I do it, I normally do it quite publicly. there are probably a few that shall remain private.
you can tell us when the cameras have stopped rolling. I mean, go back to the Met Bar in the 90s. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously.
Oh, there's a few stories from there I could tell. That's for sure.
Well, you can tell us those in a minute. But I guess, I mean, back in the day, I mean, I remember, you know, in the tabloid press, I mean, it was in the papers, you know, day in, day out. There's always something going on there with, you know, some big name at the time. But I mean, was there ever a moment, you know, when you were stood in there and you kind of looked around and really felt that you'd made it?
I don't think I've ever felt that. I don't think I've ever stood there and thought that. Not in those moments, because that's like a bar. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't stand in a bar and think.
I don't mean in a bar, but you know, when you're, I guess, surrounded by the people that you probably used to read about. You know, you read about when
they
you were
really
a kid.
People I read about, because I've got to be really honest, because I've done it since I was a kid. I've never followed like other performers, and I've never like looked at them and seen them any different to me. Do you know what I mean? Because I've done it for so long, so I've never like. Been in awe of celebrity or seen it even as celebrity. They're just people that I work with. It's not really. I think probably the only those moments when you have those little moments and you don't realise it until afterwards is probably like when I was on Broadway and there was a huge billboard in Times Square, and that was a bit of a weird moment because I wasn't even looking for it. And I was walking along to go to work and I just looked up and I was like, oh, well, that's a bit weird. Yeah, so it's not... people that make me feel like I've made it, it's situations and places that you find yourself in where you suddenly go, oh, wow, this is a little bit of a pinch me moment. But again, at the time, you don't really feel it. It's always afterwards. And I think when I did Chicago on Broadway, I actually was on the flight with Gordon Ramsay, and I've known Gordon for years. And he said to me, he said, you won't treasure this moment probably until a few years' time because you're in it. So you just, for me, it's just I'm going to work. And he was right. It wasn't until afterwards I thought, actually, that was quite a big deal, really, because they'd never really taken a Brit over to do something like that. Was the first.
I mean, I'm thinking while you're talking. I mean, for me, it's probably applicable, obviously, in a different career. But you know, like people always say to me, like, you know, like when did you, I don't know, first feel successful? When did you, you know, really feel like that business has made it, or you know, you really made some money or something? And I always think for me, I probably never really felt it because I mean, even if you look back, you were still always in the moment. It's like, okay, you know, you were looking forward to, I don't know, buying that house or buying that car or selling that business. But when you actually do it, there's probably something else that you've got to get stuck into anyway, another business and another aspect of life. And whether it's just that you don't get to enjoy it or whether it's that you get desensitized to it because, you know, you're doing it day in, day out. I guess it's probably, I guess in hindsight, a question always asked by people from a completely different industry or a completely different walk of life to you. Because I think, you know, whatever you do, you know, whenever you ask someone about stresses in their careers or highs and lows or whatever, they probably always give you an answer that sounds almost like boring and vanilla compared to what you'd think, because, you know, when you're doing it day in, day out, it just is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's my job at the end of the day, and it's a job that I love, and I'm really grateful that I still get to do it at a level where I can enjoy it, you know, and share it with my friends and family, because I think that's the thing for me. It's being able to share those moments, you know, that's what's really nice. Like when I was in New York, my whole family flew over, and it was just nice to have, like, my grandmother there and Sylvia Young came. So it's moments like that.
How long did you do Broadway for?
So I was over there. I was there for a few months. I did the London run, and then they asked me to go back to London because New York had gone really well. And then I went back to New York after that because then Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote me a one-woman show, so I had to go over and rehearse that in New York. So I spent a couple of years over there.
Cool.
I loved it. It's great.
So what's next? What other than obviously you've got a couple more weeks of that? You said that you film up in Leeds now as well. I mean, have we got any exciting projects on the go to know about or look forward to?
Yeah, there's always more. There's some theatre that I'm looking at doing at the end of the year in London, and then I'm just doing a series with the BBC that I'll start probably in August. So busy, always busy. And then Steph's Packed Lunch that I film in Leeds, which I love, which is live, and we've just been commissioned till December 23. So I'm up north twice a week, which I love.
How far ahead does your diary tend to work then?
I've got things in my diary probably up until probably the end of 2023.
And going back to what we were talking about earlier on in terms of, you know, work ethic and, you know, I guess you know, never know when it could be a last job. I mean, do you ever look at your diary, let's say a year out or whatever, and think, shit, you know, I need to get some more things in, you know, or I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, I guess, have the insecurity of not having work at these points, or do you just know that if you keep putting the graft in, then opportunities will keep flowing?
I just keep it quite free, and things tend to come in. I'm lucky in that way because I do so many different things. If anything, it's hard trying to fit everything in and juggle everything. But yeah, I just keep it pretty free. And I have to remind myself sometimes that I need a life, like just outside of work. So I always try and factor in little breaks every now and then just for everything, because you need to sort of mentally switch off. And then I'm better at my job. Otherwise, you just keep going and going. And it's like, it's tiring at times, you know. But I love what I do. So even the long car journeys, the delayed airports, you know, sitting around waiting for planes, all those things at the end of the day, when I actually get to the job, I love it. And I think that's the most important thing.
So obviously you've been doing this for 20 years or 20 years plus now. I mean, if you were sat in my shoes asking you a question, I guess advice for me really, you know, what would be the one question that I should be asking?
Okay, so right. So I'm now being you talking to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So you'd ask me, am I single? And do I want to take you out and meet some nice fellas out there?
Are you single?
Yes.
Right, let's go meet some nice guys. I'm conscious that you've got to be somewhere. We've got to go and watch some tennis. So
absolutely.
I'll say thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Guys, yeah, thank you very much for listening. As always, if you've watched this on the video version, you can go and listen to it on the audio version where you don't have to look at my pretty face on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you watch your podcasts. And as always, on social, the Matt Haycox. That's TheMattHaycox. So, Denise, thanks for being here. And guys, I'll see you on a future episode.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.